Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, in the center of Iowa, the center of it all. Thanks for joining us today. Well, it's time to think about green and growing things. There's a place here in central Iowa that's been growing food and nurturing community since 2008. It's called Mustard Seed Farm. It's a Catholic worker farm, and more importantly, it's a community farm. Joining us at our kitchen table today are Alice McGarry and Amy Adams. Welcome to our table.
Hi, Donna and Lana. It's so fun to be here with you. I'm Alice McGarry.
And I'm Amy Adams.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about Mustard Seed Farm.
Well, there's a lot to tell. I'll try to be very brief. Yeah, Donna was talking when I came in. When she first met me, she was like, oh, there's Alice singing her songs and saying, oh, I'm going to start a farm.
Right. She was a musician, and then all of a sudden she said, oh, I thought, that's nice, Alice. Sure you are going to start a farm. Well, she did.
But I had been working on farms, and I had been learning on vegetable farms, and I had been dreaming about starting a community farm that was cooperative, volunteer, and was, had a goal of growing good food in an ecological way to share with anyone who needed it. And so I got together with a few people, and we started learning things and talking to people, and we started really small. We just rented an acre of land that first year, and we camped out there. And
yes, she did.
And started growing food, and we've just kept on going every year, just trying some new things, and focusing on building community, building cooperation, growing really delicious, healthy food to share with people. Amy, what do you want to say?
My name is Amy Adams, and I came to Mustard Seed when I moved to Ames in 2021, and I was a summer intern at Mustard Seed during that growing season, and that's one of the things that's really important about the community aspect of the farm is that every year for many, many years before my time, there are different people who will come out and work alongside the volunteers and Alice and our other farm members and get to learn about growing food in Iowa. And it's a really wonderful opportunity because no experience is necessary, just a lot of enthusiasm, which was me. I had never grown vegetables before, and now I'm entering my fourth season with the farm and still really learning a lot and really happy to be a part of it.
Great. You mentioned, Alice, that you started out with an acre and it's grown a little bit since then. What actually is out there? Buildings, trees? What is on your farm?
That's a great question. Yeah. So we now own about 11 acres. And, so about 3 acres of that is in food production, and that is a lot of vegetables and some berries and some fruit and herbs and flowers, and then maybe about 5 acres is in prairie restoration, a little savanna restoration, a little wetland restoration, and then we built a house, we built some farm buildings, so slowly and slowly we've built up a space that where we can more easily say wash our vegetables and pack our vegetables and in
the summer you have your volunteers who actually live that out there also, sort of.
Well, that yes,
camp?
Yes, people can come stay with us. Yes, they can.
And you have a house out there that you built that you live in.
Yep.
Full time. Mm-hmm. A real house.
A real house.
A real house.
A real Woo-hoo! House with a roof and a stove and electricity even.
Yeah.
See, things are looking up. And, well, there were some original farm buildings there, which you are putting to good use. But recently you also built a place, well, it just... For everything else, you do programs and talk about this other building you built.
Yes, we did. We built this new building, and we're calling it the schoolhouse now. We were thinking about calling it, or somebody suggested the room of requirement, because it's sort of like this is our place to put everything that we couldn't put someplace else. But yes, we have a little wood workshop and a sewing space and a loom and a little tiny farm store. And it's a very miscellaneous space. We dry our onions. I've been drying cotton in there. So it is an everything
this
space.
Is all on 11 acres. It's pretty amazing.
Right. And also a space that if we are hosting an event and it ends up raining or something, we can move inside. We did have a square dance in this building.
How big is the building?
It's not huge. it's like 18 by 24.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, not huge.
Big enough for a square. It's just fine.
But yeah, big enough for a band and maybe even two squares.
Yeah. See, we can do this. You, besides... A dream turned into a farm, but this farm always has had a mission, which is probably, it sounds like an awful lot to take on. I mean, just growing food, being a farmer is a lot of work, but your vision has always been bigger because you wish to connect your farm to community. And now you've got a person right sitting right here, Amy, who helps you do that. Talk about what you consider your mission on this farm. What things do you do besides grow things?
So we grow things because we believe that everyone deserves access to healthy and delicious food that is grown right here, really close by. And we're really fortunate to have great relationships with so many community partners that have been built up over the last 16 years. That includes a program we call the Farm to Clinic Program, which is with Primary Healthcare in Ames, which is a not-for-profit healthcare clinic and dental clinic. Anybody can come in there and get vegetables, just no questions asked. You don't need to have an appointment that day. Really trying to help people get access, especially if they are maybe an expecting mother or a new mother or have a chronic health condition, but really just anybody at all can get access to that food. We work with Food at First, other churches, other people who are hosting community meals, the Romero House, which is a Catholic worker house that has been in Ames for the last few years. So lots of really wonderful partners that we're really fortunate to have.
Good. So you've got, you do not have faceless customers. You have people you actually know exactly where some of your food is going. This concept also of connecting up with a clinic and actually talking about healthy food, making healthy people. Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah, I've gotten involved with that program, not again because I really have any prior experience, but just because I was eager and lived nearby and enjoyed exactly that, getting to go in and see the people who were coming in to get the food. And in the last couple years, also, we've been growing a lot of flowers and been able to donate bouquets of flowers there, which is really wonderful to make people's day when mm-hmm. they're coming in and might have a lot going on in life and to have some beauty and some good food. That program has also had interns work with it, and that happened kind of a lot more before COVID. COVID really changed things, obviously, with access to those spaces. But we've had interns from Iowa State working with health and nutrition and public health. And that's an interest that we always have. If there's anybody out there interested in public health who wants to help us with this program.
That sounds great. So what do interns, well, there's a lot to do on a farm. Talk about people that volunteer and interns that come and work with you. How long do they stay? What do they do? I think it'd be hard to always be kind of making sure people didn't pull up the radishes along with the weeds. So how do you teach everybody?
Yeah, so that was a big question. I'm trying to put the pieces in order. At the core, our farm is volunteer run, is a volunteer farm. Just the past couple of years, we've been able to, with a grant from the Franciscans, we've been able to hire a few skilled laborers to fill in some gaps. But besides that, it's like all volunteer. I've been volunteering for 16 years.
Since the beginning, since the founding. Yeah.
But yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that volunteers can be involved in our farm. We have a lot of people who are just on our core team and help us make our decisions. We have people who are work shares who come out every week or when they're able to help us with a harvest and help us with packing the food. And they get to take home a big box of vegetables every time that they help. And then we have this agroecology education program. And so that's so we have interns that come here for this program, and then we have we often have a few people from Ames or from Iowa State who also join us. And so some folks are coming out maybe 3 or 4 days a week to be part of that.
This is a sort of summertime thing, right?
So that
during the growing season.
During the growing season. And that might be, it could be between May and October, but sometimes it's just people on their summer break. So maybe that like May, June, July kind of August window. And I feel like we try really hard to make sure to train people how to do all the things, and but also to figure out what are their passions, what are their goals, what do they want to learn, so that we can also make sure, again, that it's like a really an educational environment, but with that hands-on experience. And then we have really fun farm classes every week in the summer. Sometimes we have a food preservation class led by Donna Lana Kitchen.
Oh, yep. That was fun.
Yeah, we've done that a few times. It's always fun.
Yeah. Amy, you have anything you want to say about that? Just about the education program?
Yeah, the education program is a really wonderful opportunity for those interns that we've been talking about, but then just also anybody who is around who wants to drop in on a class to get some really practical and entry-level skills into a really wide variety of topics. So
food-related
or folk art-related, social justice-related. We have fiber processing with Alice sometimes.
Or with Marilyn Anderson.
Food preservation with Donna and Lana. Intro to soil science with Amber Anderson from Iowa State. We have a really just wonderful community of guest teachers who all come and offer their time and their knowledge to us.
It's a really amazing thing that you're not only growing food, you are growing community. And you're growing people that can actually come back to their home and apply their skills and learn new things. It's wonderful. I want to mention when Donna and I have gone out, well, I've been out to Alice's farm for lots of different reasons because it's a fun thing to go to. But they have some really nice places for people to gather. So Alice mentioned their newly constructed, what they call it, the schoolhouse, to put everything else in the building house, or they've got lots of places for people to gather. But there is a summer kitchen.
Right, an outdoor kitchen.
And it just is the handiest thing, especially, it must be really nice for people to, when they're working in the garden out there, and you don't exactly get clean when you work in a garden, so you don't have to get all cleaned up to go inside someplace. Talk about the summer kitchen and the fact that how it was made.
And how you use it.
Yeah.
Unless you want me to do that one.
Well, I'll start by talking about how we use it now and then let Alice chime in about the history of the outdoor kitchen. So, 4 summers ago when I was an intern, absolutely my favorite thing about that time and a big reason that I keep coming back is the feeling of harvesting food with your friends in the morning and cleaning vegetables, packing vegetables, sending them out on their way, and then stopping and taking a break to unpack the farm box, we call it, our share of vegetables for that day. And we those of us who are out on the farm working for a full day will take turns cooking and preparing a meal in the outdoor kitchen, and to just be, you know, a few yards away from where you just pulled radishes out of the field, and then to be cooking with them in the open air, listening to the birds, creating a really nice meal to sit down and enjoy together in the midst of a really like full and hard day of work. It's just such a way that I think it lifts all of our spirits.
Well, let's do a visual on that outdoor kitchen. Cause like, okay, there's a sink, a stove, a countertop, has a roof over it, but not four walls, right? Anything else?
Yeah. Well, I can talk about a little bit about how it was made. So this was, one of our first building projects, and it was like a goal to be all natural building. And I think that it is. So all the wood that in the structure is, recycled, like scraps from projects. And so old posts from barns. And then we had a natural building class, and we had a really amazing friend of ours, Beth Campbell, come. And she taught us how to do. So we, each of the walls of the building, we learned a different natural building technique. So we like dug clay from the farm, and we got some sand from about a mile away, and we used straw from our farm, and we used cattail fluff for the final plaster coat because it's real fine. And, and so we built a earthen oven, and, so it was like a pretty huge, and we learned a lot of things. And then I made some tiles for one of our counters. So I feel like it is the center of our farm. It is it is our pack house. It is our kitchen. It is where our water is. Potlucks. It's where we have our potlucks. Yeah. So it is really the center of everything on our farm, and just wanting it to be really beautiful. And it needs a lot of repair, so we're working on scheduling either just a natural builder to come help us with some repair, or maybe a little mini natural building workshop this summer.
A handy thing. And that's one thing you notice when you go out there, that yes, you can build things yourself, and yes, you can add beauty.
Rustic, handmade, yeah. And beautiful.
It is. Oh, the kitchen, the outdoor kitchen has glass bottles embedded in the wall so the sun comes through in a really nice pattern. Good job. It's just nice. You mentioned using this for a pack house, which means we're talking work here, folks. This is not just dancing around enjoying the outdoors all the time. There are vegetables to dig. There are vegetables to clean and sort. Who gets your packages of vegetables, and do you have referred to as a CSA, a consumer supported agriculture sort of event out there, or sort of a thing? Tell us who gets these packages of vegetables.
So I would say the heart of our farm community is our work shares. And so our work shares are volunteers who come out on Tuesday or Friday mornings from May to October. People come every week or drop in when they can. And that harvest crew is responsible for going out and harvesting all of the vegetables and berries and things that are going into the boxes that day. There are usually volunteers who get really good at working in the pack house and doing the washing, which are a couple important tasks that are happening every time.
Yeah, for example, if you're digging beets, you don't just throw them in the box. You have to wash all the mud off, tie them in a bundle, and then they go in the box.
Exactly. So we've got people working on those projects, and then we've got a head packer who is figuring out all the details, making sure the right amounts of things are getting to every box and that they know where those boxes are going. And then we've got another team of delivery drivers who are taking things and getting them all around Ames, dropping them off to all those partners we mentioned earlier. And then, yes, we do have some CSA members who pay to get a box of vegetables every week. And then all of those workers who are out also take home that same amount of food in exchange for their work.
And the geography of it is, you guys are what, 20 miles outside of town? You're not like on the edge of a major or even minor urban area.
Yeah, about 15 miles
out in the country.
15 miles from Ames, northwest.
Yeah.
So strategy and strategic planning has got to be pretty important. Do you have a cold storage place to keep all this stuff, or you just pack it up and send her out?
Yeah, we just have like a house fridge. We deliver everything the day we harvest. So, and we try to harvest. Yeah. So basically we try to get everything harvested that is ready out in the field, everything that is at the right maturity. We try to get it all done, all washed, packed, and delivered on Tuesday and Friday.
Ah. Very good.
That's no small accomplishment. I mean, one hears other vegetables growers who have like walk-in cooling areas and stuff like that, and there's this concept of taking the field heat out of the produce, cooling it down quickly, because if you can't cool it down quickly, it has a much shorter shelf life. So you guys have to work really fast.
Yeah, so we try to do it all in the early morning time, uh-huh. All that harvesting. We try to get it in the shade, and then are washing with really cold water. So that some of those things, that's what we are using to kind of cool them down.
Strategy. Good for you.
I wish to commend you on the skill of, okay, we're talking pack house, but let's back up a little bit. People that harvest things not only have to know what the vegetables look like in the field, but they have to know when they're ripe, know how to harvest them so they're not damaged. And having eyes on the garden is a good thing. You learn to figure out if your plants are diseased or got a problem coming. So how many people really can learn that wonderful skill of knowing how to harvest? Is that something that's hard to teach? And we laugh.
Do you have thoughts, Amy?
Well, it's year four for me, and I feel like I'm just getting a handle on some of these things, and I have a very wonderful teacher in Alice.
Yes, I've had, you know, people help me in my garden too, and you say, okay, go over there and do this, and I say, send them to the onions, and they didn't, well, start out with identifying what an onion, and, you know, there are things to learn, so I am just amazed at what a good farmer can do, and what a good farmer can teach someone else.
It is kind of wild. We have some harvest days, we might have like, maybe our smallest crew might be like 6, but our largest crew might be 35.
Okay.
And it can be really complicated. And so it is a lot of strategic teaching, and then people working up to being skilled, maybe at a couple of crops, and then teaching, like leading those crews. And so it is, thank goodness for the people who have been coming back and who have been learning and, you know, who are able to step, because I feel like on a harvest day, we have a lot of different leaders, and people kind of volunteer. They say, I could lead the carrots today, or I could lead this. Otherwise, we'd all fall apart.
So you depend on people. You are thriving because you have been building community and sharing your skills. I want to take a little break here and remind people this is KHOI Community Radio, and this is Donald on a Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We have a couple news items. Every now and then we like to dip into our news department. Tick a tick tick a tick tick a tick. That's our news ticker tape. Yes, it is. And Donna's got some fast-breaking news, haven't
you? Well, it's not very fast-breaking, but it's a continuous issue. But it seems to be getting more and more attention, rightfully so. Yesterday I opened up my newsletter that comes in the mail from the Iowa Farmers Union, and they had an article in there by the nationally syndicated ag columnist from Illinois. His name is, I don't know if this is how you pronounce it, Alan Guebert, G-U-E-B-E-R-T. His name pops up all the time. He's been writing about these issues for a long time. But this was about, of course, the nitrates in the water, and he says that this particular article that he wrote is based on work from the Environmental Working Group, whom we have quoted a long time and often. Here's two quotes from the article. An Iowa state legislator, Democrat Alan Baith, is an internal medicine specialist from Des Moines, is leading a state house effort to figure out the key drivers of our cancer rate. Iowa has the second highest cancer rate in the nation. Okay, that is a big deal. That is a big deal. You know, we've talked about this for a long time, and nitrates and agricultural other things like pesticides and da-da-da-da-da are contributing to this. And, of course, nobody will say, oh, cancer is caused by this, that, or the other. But we now have the second highest rate in the nation. So this is something we need to pay attention to. You can't see it. You can't feel it. And it happens over a long period of time. So he concludes this article. It says, it's just one good idea that serves notice that the nitrate contamination of rural and increasingly downstream urban and suburban water sources is a deadly here and now problem. And yesterday's denials and today's delays won't be suffered silently by a now better formed and increasingly endangered public. Yeah. So there you have it. Pay attention. It's coming. It's around us, and it is something we should not ignore, even though we can't see it and we can't feel it.
Until we get sick.
Yeah, right. And then no doctor is going to say, well, you know, you drank nitrate contaminated water for the last 10 years, so now you have cancer. No, they don't say that.
But we're learning new things all the time. Thanks. That's a bit of the news.
That's my grumbly, complaining, bummer news.
Bummer
right?
news is news, too. I have a bit of news, too, and it's kind of a little bit more from the silly news department, but it's just something. Here's something that we can all, as growers of food, relate to. And here we go. A Louisiana gardener has won a prize for growing a 44-pound cabbage. It's something we all hope to do sometime in our life. Yes, 44 pounds. Ah, there we go. Home gardener Jenny Borg, who lives near New Orleans, grew a giant Sapporo cabbage in her backyard. It was harvested this past December, and the Department of Agriculture measured the cabbage at 7 feet 2 inches across. Whoa. I suppose they were going from leaf edge to leaf edge, but that's a large cabbage, and officially weighed 44.115 pounds. Now you think that's good. Now this was a state record for Louisiana. The world record was set in 2012 by a farmer in Anchorage, Alaska. Wait, they've got long day legs up there.
Oh, longer day legs.
Oh,
okay.
You betcha.
Okay.
And they do
shorter growing season.
Growing, but cabbage is like, okay,
cabbage.
Get this.
Right.
In 2012, I don't believe this, it says it weighed 138 pounds.
Whoa.
You wonder what they did with that cabbage?
Oh, heavens,
what was
heavens.
The measurement on that one?
Oh, 15 dear.
15 feet across?
Yeah, it didn't say how they treated these cabbages, but this person in Louisiana was glad to get her cabbage, and she's made a lot of casserole, served it with ham, has passed it out in the neighborhood. She did get a savings bond as a prize, and She says she's officially, quote, tired of eating cabbage. But it's something we could all think about.
Well, Alice, it is. Back to the nitrate thing. How do you grow your vegetables and not contribute to nitrate pollution?
Nitrates are something that that plants need to grow. They need the nitrogen, but it's also really moves really quickly, so it really can wash away from the soil, can wash downstream, it can just wash deeper into the soil. I think that the best strategy that we have, I mean, we do a lot of things. So we use a lot of composted, we just do a lot of composting on the farm, a lot of composted weeds, a lot of composted animal manure and bedding. And so a compost, and then we also do a lot with cover crops. Mm. And so part of how cover crops work is that there's something growing in the soil almost all the time. You know, in the winter, it's maybe not growing, but it has its roots there. And so...
So the soil is not blowing into the snow.
Right. So
making snert.
So yes, one, we're trying to control erosion and even water leaving our farm. We're trying to capture water. We're trying to, we're trying to keep the soil covered. But also, like... maybe this is too long of an explanation. Maybe it doesn't make sense. But part of what cover crops do and part of what having roots in the ground is that if there are extra nutrients that would maybe wash away, like these plants are taking them up and holding them in their plant matter. And so they don't wash away when they're like part of a plant. And then when those plants die, they are also still more connected into like that organic material. And so they break down more slowly.
Build more soil.
Yes, and that nitrate is released more slowly for the plants to uptake, and so instead of having a big flush, like if you just want...
Okay, so you are not ever just spraying, you know, commercially made nitrogen onto your field that you...
No, I've never
brought
done
in
that.
In a truck and sprayed it out.
No, we're never doing that.
So there are ways to manage nitrogen, which is it's a necessary element for growing plants, but the way it's managed... we could emulate some of the things that you're doing a lot better here in Iowa.
Well, you mentioned animals. Do you have animals on your farm?
We do. We have some chickens. We have some sheep.
Producers of nitrogen fertilizer.
Yep.
Yeah, good. It's always good. It's good to have livestock because it kind of is part of the cycle, just like we're part of the cycle,
yep,
too. So good. Good, those animals. It's spring. It's spring. What are you doing? Like
it's a very
right
early
now?
Spring.
Well, right, early spring.
Right. We're not. Sorry. We haven't even hit March yet. Okay.
But I don't know. I've got my seed catalogs all ordered, and the seeds are coming in. And are the things you're doing now to prepare for the garden?
Yes, and I was going to ask you, Lana, about how your feelings are about this weather that we've been going through and how warm our winter is. And then like this week, how we had yesterday was in the 70s. Tonight, our forecast is to be down to 9.
Yes.
With a wind chill of negative 10. And then going back up to 80 on Sunday.
It's a little whiplash for the plants.
Yeah. So I'm curious right now, like what's going on with... Yeah, what's going on with those plants, those perennials or the garlic, the trees? I'm wondering. Yeah, I don't. And they're smart. There's often weather swings in the winter time and in the springtime, but
this is a little extreme.
It is. Yeah, it's like how smart are these plants going to be with the changes that climate change brings? Is kind of a scary thing for me. Do you have any wisdom?
Wisdom. Well, I rely on is that the plants are a lot smarter than I am. Although there are things coming up. I've got motherwort is up
the
already.
Motherwort is up.
And flowers. And I noticed, this is not good, the elm trees are starting to bud.
Oh, and the magnolia trees are budding,
yeah,
too.
And granted, last week on the Don and Lana Kitchen, last week on the Don and Lana Kitchen, we talked about the fact the sap in the maple trees is starting to go, which is fine and dandy. But it can be too warm for that. The trees are going, okay, it's spring. The usual cycle is that freeze-thaw, freeze-thaw. The sap is pumping from the bottom of the tree to the top of the tree to the bottom. And that is a great way, evidently, for the maple trees to wake up that pumping action. But once it gets too warm, the trees are going to say, it's spring, and start put all of their sap energy up into the leaves. And unfortunately, and it's really bad for fruit trees, unfortunately, if they leaf out too soon.
That's a little
and
scary.
Get zapped. So we are hoping for not. There's not much you can do. What are you going to do? Cover your fruit trees with bed sheets? It's kind of hard there. We can be a little bit on top of things. You have a greenhouse, right? I have a small one, too. Mm-hmm. And one can at least kind of, like we do all year, we like to push the season a little bit and grow things in there. But when it comes to the things that are permanently outside, the trees, and I don't know, I haven't had any garlic showing up yet. Have you had garlic pocket?
Well, so I didn't look today, and I was saying I've been nervous to look. I was gone all weekend for the Midwest.
Well, let's remind our audience that the garlic is planted in the fall and stays in the ground all winter doing its thing. So,
yeah, and I was going to say, I feel like my hope, also I have a lot of hope in our mulch. So I feel like our trees, at this point, most of our grapes are mulched. Our garlic is very well mulched. And so my hope is that that's going to keep the soil temp from fluctuating. It's going to keep it cooler. And so hopefully, I'm hoping that my garlic is going to stay kind of dormant, or at least under that mulch until we get a little bit later in the spring.
I mean, we still have 2 months left of possible frost dates.
Yes.
That's kind of a lot.
It is a lot.
And it's not so much the, above freezing, below freezing. I like you, Alice, I'm rather concerned about the fact we're having summer temperatures and back down to minus whatever.
Yes.
This is very, and the things that, well, things like garlic pickup and motherwort and these little things that are, even if they get nipped a little bit, I'm not too worried. But, those poor fruit tree branches that are out there. So,
yeah.
And just remember, folks, you think climate change doesn't affect us? Well, think about that next time you go out to buy a pear or something.
Yeah, well, and remember last year the peaches in Georgia and North Carolina, those are the major peach growing country regions in the country. Last year, they had the peaches started to bloom. Then they had a frost, and we did not have peaches from those areas.
Luckily, we had. Do you have a peach tree?
We had really
great
good,
local peaches.
Good peaches in Iowa last year. Yeah.
See.
But last year's spring was really lovely. Last year's spring was really slow and steady. It was, maybe drier than we like, but it was not very fluctuating. I was really grateful for last year's spring. And this spring is really different.
We're trying. So, garlic is in the ground already, but what are some of the first things, not yet, but what are the first things you will be planting?
Yeah, so I did start a bunch of trays of onions and leeks and shallots and some woody herbs like rosemary and lavender and parsley and celeriac already.
Ooh,
but that's all inside. So those were and they went outside for the first time to the greenhouse just a couple days ago. I mean, maybe it was Saturday. It was like the first day in the greenhouse. But yeah, our greenhouse is not heated. So at night, if it goes below freezing, the plants have to come back to the house.
Ah.
So that's kind of crazy. But right now it's only maybe 8 trays that I have in my house, in the window. And then we won't plant outside until April. We have kind of a schedule. So starting next week, we'll have a schedule of trays inside that we start, like a big batch every week. And then starting in April, we'll start planting outside and in the greenhouse every week. And then we'll probably, we'll have a planting schedule all the way until June. And then it kind of, we slow down our planting and just do a few succession plantings after that of a few crops.
Good. Oh, celeriac. I've never grown that. Say a few words about celeriac.
That's the celery root. So it's the same species as celery, and it has little celery stalks and on the top of it, but it has a really big root. And if you like the celery you buy in the store with really long stalks, that's a different variety, and it doesn't have a big root.
The celery root is usually about the size of a softball at least.
Yeah.
And it's very gnarly looking, and it's one of my favorite vegetables.
Yeah, it's so...
You can roast it, you can steam it, you can eat it raw. It's a hilarious thing to teach cooking with, because people look at it and go, what do you do with those hairy... It looks like a hairy root ball, right? And they kind of slice the outside off, and inside is just a beautiful vegetable.
Yeah, and I feel like it's milder... Oh, well, and it has a nicer texture than I think the stringy celeries. And then,
oh yeah, it's closer to what you would do with a parsnip, kind of.
Yeah, and then also the stalks and the leaves have a really good celery flavor. So I wouldn't like chew on them because I feel like they're tougher, but I feel like they're really good in soups or anything that you would want to put that celery flavor in.
Good. So I've never grown celery. Is that hard to grow?
It's long. It takes a long time. So, like, I'm starting it early, and it's going to be harvested, like, you know, in September.
Ooh.
And it likes fertile, and it likes consistent water.
Yeah.
And it doesn't like to ever get really cold. It doesn't really like a frost.
Okay. I always like to try new things. Celeriac.
It's fun.
Yeah. And yes, I do know what the root looks like, and it's like, my goodness, you are an ugly vegetable. But we learn to like a new thing.
Beautiful, ugly vegetable.
It's a beautiful, ugly vegetable. Yes, it is. This is KHOI. And you can find out more about the Donalana Kitchen and all kinds of other good programming here on this station at www.khoifm.org. And, Donna, tell them about our podcast.
Oh, right. This show that we are doing live now will be repeated tonight on air at KHOI at 7 o'clock. And then Thursday, it's posted on a podcast called The Donalana Kitchen, which you can find wherever you listen to podcasts.
Very good. Welcome back. We are talking to Alice McGarry and Amy Adams about Mustard Seed Community Farm. So tell us some ways people can get involved with this wonderful organization.
We've got lots going on right now. In addition to starting seeds and dreaming about spring, we have our annual spring fundraiser, as we call it, this Saturday at 5 p.m. at Harvest Vineyard Church here in Ames. There's going to be a potluck, community singing, some crafts. It is for people of all ages. It is for friends and neighbors and new friends. We want to see you there. And we will also be at Sustainapalooza tonight at Iowa State in the Memorial Union. That's a really fun event with lots of eco-friendly information and vendors and things to do. So come say hi to us there. And especially if you're a student or really anyone over the age of 18, if you're looking for a summer internship, you could come and talk to us tonight at Sustainapalooza, or you could go to our website, www.mustardseedfarm.org, to learn more about our internship opportunities.
Anything else?
Yeah, so we also are doing some other events coming up. So we've been part of this project to have a seed library at the Ames Public Library, and there's going to be some great seed library events coming up. I might not have all the dates right, there's a volunteer day on Sunday, March 3rd. Yes. And then there's going to be on the 23rd of March, there's going to be like the launch of the Seed Library.
What are we calling a seed library? Is it a seed exchange? Is it a...
So, yeah. So you can bring seeds to share.
That you have saved?
That you have saved. Uh-huh. You also, there have been a lot of donated seeds. So you, anyone in our community who uses the library can go to the library. This will be, I think, open starting March 23rd at that launch. But you can help us get started before then. But yeah, so you can go, anybody can check out seeds and they're just like free and they should come with some information about how to grow them. And then you can use them in your own garden. If you do save seeds, you can bring them to share.
So you return them like you return the books to the library.
But you don't have to return them.
You're not good at this, right?
Right. So yeah, you can just check out and you know, it's a great way to start a garden. It's a great way to try something new. It's a great way, it's a great way for a community to help each other learn how to grow food. So that's happening. There's also, I'm teaching a growing food in Iowa class at Wheatsfield, also in March. And then April 27th, again at the library with the Repair Cafe, there's going to be another seed library event. And also on the 23rd of March, back to that previous one, we're going to do some seed starting. So if people want to come, learn how to start seeds and take home a little pot or two or four of things that they have, seeds that they planted to grow in their own garden.
Oh, good. A skill. Not only growing seeds, but guess what, folks? All these plants grow and they produce seeds. That's how life works. And being part of that is a really good thing. And somebody at, like, Alice or Amy at Mustard Seed Farm are great. They're great resources to learn how to do that. It's not super hard, but there are tricks. There are tricks, just like there are tricks to planting and growing things out. Very good, very good. And oh, see, spring is coming. We get all excited talking about this.
And okay, wait. I'm going to ask the question every year. How many varieties of tomatoes are you going to grow, Lana?
Oh, I'm cutting back this year. Maybe just like 15.
Whoa. That's half of her usual amount. How many are you guys going to grow out at Mustard Seed?
Just guessing.
Oh, 40?
Yes. Good. Alice is picking up the slack. All right. Let's hear it for the next generation of farmers.
Right. Yes. But it's just... They're so nice. It is not a burden. It is a joy to grow things. It really is.
It's amazing. Lovely.
And you talk about other classes that you have. I really have always appreciated, Alice, how you mix the arts in with what you grow. And you do a lot of things with fiber. We forget that is a agricultural product. So talk about the kind of classes that are art classes that you're going to be having this coming year.
Yeah, well, we're still working on our schedule. We are hoping to have a natural dyeing kind of fiber weekend sometime in the summer, and then a craft retreat in the fall. I do really care about local food and healthy and ecological local food, and also that our fashion industry is one of the biggest users of fossil fuels. It's one of the biggest creators of waste. You know, our cotton industry uses a lot of farmland and has a lot of
heavy pesticide footprint. Oof.
Yeah, so I'm also really interested in the idea of having a sustainable fashion and a local, like a local watershed, local food shed, but also local fiber shed. So I'm passionate about it. I'm also just passionate about kind of the ways that we can, on a small scale, sort of transform our economic system from being this sort of greedy, competitive,
large, multinational,
and extractive, to being something that is cooperative and caring, and, you know, we're doing work because we want to We want to do good things for each other and the planet. So that's, I think we're trying to do that in these little ways on the farm.
Yes.
Do you want to say anything?
Well, one thing, Alice, I learned from you a long time ago, but you taught me about the art of the swap and a way to not use or not to buy all this new stuff when the fashion season comes around. You know me, I'm always on the top of the fashion pile. But the idea that, hey, I just may have something that doesn't fit, and it's really a great coat, but I never wear it. And yes, you could just take it all and take it to the Goodwill, but something about the community event of having a time when people can show up and honest to goodness say, I'm not going to sell this to you. I'm going to give this away. And I just may pick up something of my own. So thank you, Alice.
Are you doing a swap at this upcoming event or not?
No.
Well, I have some great news. At Sustainapalooza tonight, there is a clothing swap. Huh? And Sustainapalooza is, again, at the Memorial Union at Iowa State, but it is open to the public, open to everyone.
It's just a really nice way to tweak your brain about what do I need, what do other people need.
Yeah, circulating all these things in the economy rather than the landfill.
Mm-hmm. Yes, bring something and swap it. And say goodbye to something that you really loved, all right, but it doesn't fit. But you can say hello not only to a new piece of something, a new pair of shoes, a new hat, but you just might meet the person that you got it from. So it's just a very, and again, it's another way of getting along in community, a really fine way to get along. Good. Give us information, anything else you want to say about your farm, and information on how people can contact you.
Yeah, so I kept thinking that too. I was like, we're on the radio. People might just tune in for 5 minutes. But so I'm Alice McGarry. I'm here with Amy Adams. We are with the Mustard Seed Community Farm. And yeah, so you could look for us on Instagram. You can look for us on Facebook. You can look for at our website, which is with the www, but it's mustardseedfarm.org. So pretty straightforward, mustardseedfarm.org. And we have, it's kind of a little old school website, but it has stuff about our internship there. It's got stuff about the work shares. It's got our calendar. It's got our events, our little blog. So, and it has our contact info, but yeah, so am I giving out phone numbers on the radio?
No, just repeat when your next event at the Harvest Vineyard.
Right, purchase. And then come join us for this really fun potluck that we're having. It's a fundraiser, March 2nd. That's this Saturday, 5 to 7, at the Harvest Vineyard Church in Ames. And yeah, you come even if you don't want to bring any food to share. We want to see you. We want to have a party. There's going to be plenty of food. There's going to be Jen Hamm is going to be doing craft activities. We're going to Solveig Orngard is going to lead community singing, and we're just going to have a lot of fun together. Yeah, so come join us.
Good. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Alice. Here from Mustard Seed Farm. Isn't it nice to know that there are good things happening? There are good things happening right here in central Iowa. Mustard Seed Farm, a good thing to know. They grow community there. Yes, they do. Lots of things going on. A few events. PracticalFarmersOfIowa.org is another bunch of people to connect up because they have a lot of things about of interest to farmers, including online workshops and in-person workshops, two of them on meat and butchering. Right? We never learned those things. One on frost seeding and clover and shepherding. So practicalfarmers.org. Yes, it is. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We come to you live at noon on Tuesdays, repeated at 7 p.m. Music today by the Barn Owl Band. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And we had Fine Engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.